Welcome to the Gleeman's Apprentice, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I am his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
Travel in the wastelands in search of every story. The Gleeman's goes to find tales of bravery and glory. Pass along achievements accomplished by mighty folks. The telling of the wheel made up by different spokes. He comes across a long last singing whose clothes are tattered and worn. Invited her on his journey.
As Mandy Cat has already read the first four books of the series, there are always potential spoilers up through The Shadow Rising.
And after that, I'll be reading the rest of the books for the very first time with my Gleeman, Twitch.
All right, welcome back to the Gleeman's Apprentice. I am, of course, your resident Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I'm his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
And
here we are.
We had an exciting week. Well, not us together, but the community of the Wheel of Time had an exciting week because the trailer dropped.
You got a legit trailer. Yeah, I watched it at work.
It was amazing.
And more context for us, huh?
We're not going to talk about it because everybody and their aged grandmother is covering the trailer, and so we don't have to. Just go watch, you know, Melchior Talks or Lesby Nerdy or The Dusty Wheel or Nablus. They've all got you covered. So anyways, what we are doing are chapters 37 to 39 today.
Correct. Yeah, we left everyone hanging in the, were they in the waste, Emra stand?
Yep. And
we gotta finish that for people.
These are three really long chapters.
So we gotta jump into it, is what you're saying.
So we gotta get going, because this is gonna be a long episode. But it makes sense to get these out of the way and then
move forward.
Go on from there.
So, chapter 37, Emra stand. Am I saying that? Emra?
I always said Emre? Emra? Something like that. So, Emra okay. Stands.
All right, so we're back to Rand and Matt and crew. Remember, they just met some peddlers or something.
Yep.
Anywho, and then where did we lose that? So they're headed to Emra Stand, and this crew with Ruark, right, and the Jaido.
Yep.
And actually the Shido are the ones parallel to them, so they're all together with the Wise Ones still. And Rand's really unhappy that they're not continuing to put miles on when they decide to stop at Emra Stand. But Ruark is like, nope, peddlers have heavy wagons. We're not going to, like, endanger their poor mules or break their wheels. So he's just being thoughtful.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was the planned place to stay.
So. Well, and this place has water. So Whenever you're able to camp near water, you camp near water. That's just what you do.
And the water, as it turns out, is like a tiny puddle.
Like a spring.
It's literally a spring, but it's very tiny. Yep. But they're like, no, the next one will be better.
Yep.
So Rand is observing that Moraine and the Wise Ones are not staring at him for once, and instead they're staring at something sparkly in Moraine's hands. I think this might have happened in the last chapter, and I didn't recognize it, or I didn't say it. But is this Moraine's blue charm? Are they, like, eavesdropping? Because I feel like that's what they're doing. Because her blue charm would help her overhear things, I think.
We know she learned how to channel by focusing
on
that blue stone, and that's how she learned how to eavesdrop. So even though the blue stone doesn't have anything to do with it, her ability to eavesdrop on people
is enhanced.
She has to use the blue stone. That's her focus point in order to do that trick, because that's a trick that not everybody has. In order to do that trick of the eavesdropping, she has to be looking at focusing on the blue stone.
So they're not looking at him anymore. They're looking at something sparkly.
Yeah.
And this unsettles Rand that they would find something more interesting than him. So he's thinking critically, like, okay, what could that be? Avienda teases Rand again that he deserves punishment for his treatment of Elaine. Well, and just for the record, his treatment wasn't that bad.
No.
It was Elaine wanted more begging and pleading from him when he supported what she was planning to do and go to Tanchico.
Like we said a couple episodes, she wanted that land moment. She wanted Rand to storm in, be all upset that she was leaving, and then grab her into an embrace and make out with her right in front of everybody. Who gives a shit?
Gratuitous make-out scene.
And,
okay.
But so, yeah, so... So she she's harping on him because he was looking at the wise ones, and then he looked at and then he looked at Egwene, and she's like, "Stop looking at other women." And he's like, "Dude, I've got a history with Egwene. Egwene and I know each other really well. We were betrothed.
Yeah.
I've known Elaine for a couple months. We made out a couple times. Like, this is kind of ridiculous.
It's totally different.
But I did want to highlight during the whole time that he's looking at them, he's thinking about how he just can't trust any of them. He can't trust the wise ones. He can't trust Moraine. And he doesn't even know if he can trust Egwene anymore.
Yeah.
Because she's, you know.
Then Rand tells Avienda, you got to respect the Karakarn. Like, he loses his patience. Because he never is like that, actually. This is the first time I've really seen him demand respect. And Rurik is basically like, nah. She can disrespect as she wants.
Yep.
But it's not necessarily the greatest honor how she's going about it.
So he says, a clan chief is not a wetlander king, Rand, nor is the Karakarn. There is respect, though women generally show as little as they can get away with it. But anyone can speak to a chief. Some do push the bounds of honor.
Yeah.
And he says that with a side look at Avienda.
So scouts return, including Adolin, and she announces trouble at Imra's Stand. No one is to be seen. Then the wise ones appear to have already heard the news, and I just thought, okay, I'm right. They're using Moraine's charm to eavesdrop. Rand demands from Avienda for her to tell him what is going on for reals. And she just says, she kind of goes on about, well, there must have been a raid for goats. And then she rattles off a bunch of septs. I don't know if you wanted to highlight any of these. I just said there's Tyrene, Jara, Goshen. Any of them maybe wanted goats? Is what she's thinking? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, any of them could be the ones that raided.
So the Aiel approach the buildings in Imra's Stand, correct? And Rand is holding his Sidene power. And he's following slowly because he wants to be in control. And Avienda's pissed because she's like, we've got to move forward. And he's like, no, I need to control my power. He's also preoccupied because he really wants to get to the clan chiefs at Al-Qardal, the Golden Bull, right? He's just kind of this mess of like, what's going on here? I want to keep going.
Yep.
What's the holdup?
Yep. He's really impatient right now. He's like, I got shit to do. I got Forsaken to kill. I got plans to lay.
Yeah, so they arrived at town. These are crude buildings built into the land. And there are still some goats. Then Rurik opens a door to one building. Rand follows, sees liquid splattered everywhere, walls, ceiling, etc. Dried the color of black, except that it's all blood. Matt mutters, Trollocs. Although Avienda is like, no, not Trollocs. They would be hunted, not the hunters. Doesn't believe Trollocs are to be hunted.
She's like, here in the waste, the Trollocs are the hunted, not the hunters.
Okay.
In fact, I've heard that the Trollocs call the Isle Waste the Dying Ground.
Okay. But guess who's seen more Trolloc blood than her? Matt. Or Trolloc death.
Yep. Matt.
Okay. So
Rand.
They set up camp. With all that blood, no one's found, right, in this village. They just, these peddlers and Aiel set up camp. Peddlers on the edge of the Jindo camp. So Shido, who desired to trade, have to go to the Jindo.
Yeah.
So sorry, Kuladin.
Yeah.
He did that
on purpose.
Yeah.
That was a very smart thing for Rurik to do, because he just doesn't trust Kuladin far enough to throw him.
No. And then Kadir enters scene now with a dark-haired young woman in a red silk gown and velvet slippers more fit for a palace than the waste. He brings her to the blood-splattered room, and Rand notes she seems to be putting on a show of shuddering, but her interests lie elsewhere, including in Rand.
Yes.
So she just wanted to see what's going on, but she really just wanted to be shown off, basically.
Yeah. Because she's a very pretty girl.
Her name is Isendra?
Yes. Perfect.
And she just immediately calls Rand, he who comes with the dawn.
Yeah.
So she's like...
So you're he who comes with the dawn. Oh. I expected someone more handsome.
Oh my gosh, Isandra. And then I was just thinking to myself, is this Lanfear? Because that's a weird comment she would make. Or it's just a weird-ass power play.
No? Do you think it's Lanfear? You've read this book,
I've read this, and I was going to highlight this when we started today, and I'm going to highlight it more the next chapter. So much of this, I can't remember details. I remember the gist of it, but I can no longer remember basic details. So.
Do you remember who Lanfear is? If anybody is Lanfear, I should say?
If anyone is... Oh, there's someone that I can't name that I know to be suspicious of in these chapters, but I can't remember why.
Okay.
So anyway, it just leads to Rand. He's just... Wait. Isandra returns to her wagon and Kadir comments that he heard that Rand took Kalindor from the stone. And all Rand can do is just be really wary. How does this man know all this? Now he knows I can use the power.
Yeah.
And all Rand says is, best not to believe what you hear or half of what you see. Pretty good comeback, right?
Yeah. Yep. But then Kadir shoots back, a wise rule. Yet to achieve greatly, a man must believe something. Belief and knowledge pave the road to greatness. Knowledge is perhaps the most valuable of all. We all seek the coin of knowledge. Your pardon, good sir. Isandra is not a patient woman. Perhaps we will have another opportunity to talk.
Usually he is. Another guy seeking glory and power.
And then Alvianda barks, you belong to a layman, Althor. Do you stare so at every woman who comes in front of your eyes, or only the ones who go half naked? If I strip off my clothes, will you stare at me? And yeah, probably.
Yeah, he didn't though when she ran naked to Rydian.
He didn't even notice her. No. Yeah.
So anyway, Rand basically... I don't know if you want to highlight anything else, but basically he finally is just like, I'm going to go to LAN and do some sword practice.
Yep.
And it's with a dummy sword, but the Aiel don't even approve of the wooden sword. LAN does share more warder tactics, like never lose connection or concentration. And he shares how to defeat Aiel by knowing some basic Aiel maneuvers.
Yep. And yep. No, he asked him, if you don't mind, I'll read this.
Yeah, go ahead.
How do Aiel fight, LAN? Hard, the warder said dryly. They never lose concentration. Look here. With the sword, he drew on the hard, cracked clay a circle and arrows. I'll change tactics according to circumstances, but here's one they favor. They move in a column, divided into quarters. When they meet an enemy, the first quarter rushes in to pin them. The second and third sweep wide to either side, hitting the flanks and rear. The last quarter waits in reserve, often not even watching the battle except for their leader. When a weakness opens, a hole, anything, the reserve strikes there. Finish.
And he's not wrong, right? It was, yeah, is Avienda there or Ruark? Yep. One of them is just
both
like,
of them.
Yeah.
Both of them are there.
Yeah, and that can happen sometimes.
And Rand asks how they beat him, and Lan, you know, there's a strategy, and he explains it, and Avienda then just freaks out. Did you...
No, I didn't highlight.
She just freaks out. She's like, why do you want to learn how to fight Aiel? Are you not he who comes with the dawn, meant to bind us together and return us to old glories? Besides, if you want to know how to fight Aiel, ask Aiel, not a Wedlander. His way will not work.
Fair enough.
Ruark says, it has worked well enough with border men from time to time.
But this is where we get to see Ruark do his sneaky guidance. It's very sneaky. Rand is dog tired of doing sword play, but at this point Ruark, it comes with a metal tip spear and says, okay, time for spearing lessons. And I think this was subtle guidance that the Aiel who've been watching aren't enthralled with sword play. Time to get with current culture.
Yep. I do want to highlight though, because Ruark does take this opportunity to really dress down Avienda.
Oh.
He says, allowances are always made when someone suffers a disappointment, Avienda, but there is a limit to sulking. You gave up the spear for your obligation to the people and the blood. One day, no doubt, you will be making a clan chief do what you want instead of what he wants. But if instead you are a wise one to the smallest hold of the smallest sept of the Tardad, the obligation remains, and it cannot be met by tantrums. So he basically just calls her out for being, you know, a tantrum throwing little toddler, you know, and I love it. I love that because he's been very patient with her.
Yeah.
And he finally just loses it. And that's when he's like, okay, I came here because I figured you'd want to practice with the spears instead of these swords.
So then we get a perspective change to Matt. He's people watching in the shade thinking Rand's the fool for working out in the heat of the day. I kind of agree, Matt.
Yeah.
Matt watches Aiel make trade with peddlers, doing his thing. He's observing, seeing Aiel know the worth of their items. Fun facts. Aiel, who like books, take them all. Silks are not touched, but lace and velvet and ribbons are bought immediately. Wine and brandy are readily sold. And one Aiel asked specifically for Two Rivers Tobacco, but none to be had. Damn you, white cloaks and trellics. Okay. So, Matt has a moment of dissociation. And it seems to be remembering a battle scene, stopping himself when he realized, and says to himself, it happened again. So apparently this is a regular thing, to be like dissociated into battle scenes.
He just starts thinking about other memories that he obviously didn't live, but he remembers.
He reflects about not having answers about marrying the daughter of the Nine Moons, and looks at his fox head medallion that came from the Foxy People world. And one pupil of the fox is a yin-yang of the Aes Sedai. How interesting is that? He also holds the sword shaft from the Foxy People, observing it to be Aes Sedai work with two ravens marked on it.
Yep. So that's the blade.
Yep.
That's at the end of his staff.
Yeah, it's like a spear blade.
But it's like a sword blade.
Sword, but it's not a spear.
It's like a sword blade at the end of a spear. So it's
a little bit of both.
Yep.
He reflects to his memory when it didn't have holes and now having constant thoughts of battles and preferring to think of these memories as dreams. So remember, he asked for the holes to be filled for the Foxy People. So now there's no more holes. Okay. That's what he's thinking of. He's also aware he can read Old Tongue as he feels the writing on the shaft sword.
Sasovraya Niende Mesenye. I am lost in my own mind. And that is when...
he's interrupted by the Glee Man, whose name we learn is Jason Natale.
Jason Natale.
Natale also seems to know way too much, in my opinion, commenting about Matt's interesting life in the company of Aiel, Aes Sedai, and He Who Comes with the Dawn. Matt just assumes that Aiel have been talking, but... the Aiel don't strike me as too gossipy. I don't know, but maybe they are. Natale demands for Matt to tell him what he has seen in Rhydian, which also seems fishy to me, but Natale claims it's his duty as Gleeman to collect stories, so Matt goes ahead and shares, minus the twisted doorway or the dust storm bubble of evil, instead of just sharing about Avendisora, the great city within.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Here, Kylie. Did we agree to call her Kylie?
Yes.
Kylie comes in to berate Natale for sitting and gossiping. Yeah, that's what I thought too. Although Natale defends his newfound stories of Viridian, and then they just are arguing as they walk away. So that's our meeting with Natale. He just wanted to know the dirt. Now it's back to dinner time. We're at Ruark's fire. Most of our protagonists are sitting with the peddler crew as well. And Ruark asks the Glee Man for a song. Here Matt observes, to some surprise, Natale does not have all his instruments with him, which Tom always did, right?
Oh, wait. Tom did not leave his room without his harp.
So what kind of Glee Man is this? So
exactly.
Natale goes to his tent, comes back with a harp, and then sings a song of the battle at Manetherin. Very interesting choice, right? Don't you just feel like they know way too much about stuff Matt, Rand, and Perrin have slowly been learning?
Maybe.
And this... you can describe it more if you want, but to me it was just the hopeless battle, and they described it between King Burian and villainous Edamon.
Yes.
And everyone died.
Pretty much. Edamon was so moved by the strength and passion of the Manetherin that even after Edamon won, he allowed the refugees to run away, basically.
Oh.
So that was his mercy, right? But it sounds like Manetherin got their asses kicked.
But then Matt reflects after the song, I don't remember it that way. And he remembers counseling Burin not to accept the offer, and then has his own memories of Edamon eventually seeing a gray-bearded Edamon going down off his horse, a spear in his back by an unarmed, armored, spearless boy.
Yep.
Do you think that was Matt, the little boy?
It could have been, maybe.
So anyway, Matt had another dissociation. Matt's memory is
through somebody else's eyes, though, so.
Yeah.
Possibly. Anyways.
Nottail comments after that Rand didn't like the song, and Rand just answers, I'm not sure how wise it is. I kind of like Rand when he's being elusive, not when Rand's being super impatient.
Yep.
But he's getting good at the, like, I'm going to evade what you just asked me.
Yeah.
And then in true Robert Jordan fashion, cries are heard in the dark and we're immediately shoved into a battle scene. Trollocs, Matt was right. And murder all, you know. So I just summarize it like this. Rand uses his power sword. Matt uses his shaft sword. Aiel fight like no other until no Shadow Fiend is left. But
Matt feels like he was saved more than once by Aiel's spears and arrow shafts.
Matt observes peddler wagons. So a bunch are on fire. He even sees one peddler who is speared into the side of his own wagon. We know Avienda was fighting because she has her scarf partially used as a shufa. Rurik just says, oh yeah, the attack was on our camp. There were even a few Trollocs at the Shido camp, and even the Wise Ones were attacked, but Moraine and Luck saved them.
Yep, and he reflects that the Shido were probably attacked so that it would keep them from coming to their aid.
If they would have even come to their aid.
But they probably wouldn't have even done that because they're Shido and they're pieces of Shido.
So Rand does his thing and just insists, yes, I bring enemies with me. Here, though, I think this is key. Matt observes Isendra and Kadir coming out of the lead wagon. Then Nathiel stepping out of Kylie's wagon. He's watching Matt and the others. Like, Nathiel looks like he's watching Matt. Why were they in their wagons? Just hiding? And Matt kind of thinks they're stupid for doing it. But I'm thinking, I agree. It's like something's up to no good. Why were they safe in their wagons?
They don't really seem like fighters. They were probably just hiding. Their wagons are probably like...
I don't know.
They seem like they're the main peddlers, so their wagons are probably the most protected. They're probably like in the inner circle.
Yeah,
the other wagons are probably surrounded them.
Maybe. They're in a line, though, according to the beginning, but...
Yeah.
Back to Rand. He is sassing Moraine, who appears to be cautioning him. The attack was aimed at him, and then Egwene chides him for not being more kind, and I think Moraine even looks a little hurt. Rand goes to his tent and wakes the next morning to have Avienda waiting outside and feels relieved to see her as she is clear about her feelings toward him.
Yep. And at least he knows who she is. He knows that she's the spy and he doesn't have to have any, like, pretenses. And then doesn't he have a moment where he thinks about Nind?
Was that this one
that
or the
last?
Last
chapter?
I think I did say it the last chapter, too.
It's but I feel like he did it again, like...
Okay.
No, maybe he didn't.
But basically, we are confirmed Trollocs are the hunters now, Avienda. Sorry, they're hunting you.
Yeah?
But it's mysterious because they're not supposed to be.
They're like, not... They shouldn't
be
that far
lying.
Down.
She wasn't lying what she said. She's like, no, we hunt them. They
like,
don't hunt us.
Really, there's no way that that many Trollocs could have been that far into the waste without... being seen by other Aiel.
Yeah.
There's no way. So.
So things are changing.
It is a conundrum. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to cover from Imrys Stand? I think
it pretty much just wrapped up and they got attacked by Trollocs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not good. It was aimed at Rand, which at this point doesn't feel surprising, but it makes me also just think like, wait, was Cooladin in on this? The peddlers just seem fishy to me, but maybe it's just because they're peddlers. I don't know. So, not much.
It almost seems like, because it wasn't a huge horde of Trollocs. It almost seems like they're just kind of testing defenses.
It looks like they destroyed Imrys Stand.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably a small community, but...
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a small
camp.
Then
is there a ways...
A way gate?
Yeah.
Close by? Maybe.
Must
we don't know.
Be. How else would they get there?
I don't know.
How did the peddlers get there without a guide?
Oh, that's really
I don't think you could bring them through. I don't think you bring those wagons through the ways without losing some.
Okay.
They'd be messed up. So.
All right. Chapter 38, Hidden Faces. We're moving out of the Rand chapters and getting into the girls.
have a disclaimer. I'm reading this chapter and I'm like, I remember next to nothing from this chapter. So either I heavily skim them on the first read through, which is likely because I still found them pretty boring. It's more set up than anything.
Yeah.
There is data we need to know from them, but I was almost like, did I completely skip reading this? That's how I felt reading this chapter. So that's my disclaimer. Anyway, welcome to Tanchico, famous for tanning and other fine trades. We open scene in a large wine shop called the Garden of Silver Breezes. Emphasis on Tanchico continuing strong as long as there is gold to be had. Nowadays, people wear masks to protect their identities. Sometimes their guards wear masks as well. And this has to be how bad things are, right? You're going to get robbed if you have money, so you have to wear masks so people don't know how rich you are.
Yes.
Which I'm like, this wine shop is clearly expensive. So I'm like, shouldn't anyone entering or exiting just be attacked immediately? Because they obviously have gold. But anyway,
all have guards.
So I said, we're in the perspective of someone new, a woman named Igianin. Now, at first I said, I don't think we've met her, but later, did we meet her once in a previous book? Because we quickly find out she's Cianchen. And then I'm like, oh, she might be one of those ones who had a small exchange
She's the one that attacked Bael Doman's ship.
You.
Do you remember Bael Doman?
Oh, I know Bael Doman.
So she's the Cianchen that attacked Bael Doman.
Horrible. All right, so we have met her before. Anyway, I completely forgot, though. Anyway, she's sitting there pondering how her assignment has brought her here to Tanchico, wishing she was on deck giving orders. Lo and behold, Florin Gelb, once Bael Doman's, sailor.
Really?
Yeah. Florin Gelb was...
It didn't say that, but you remembered?
Oh, how do you forget him? This is the one Rand kicked awake in the Eye of the World.
Yeah.
And then Rand screwed him over because then he got blamed for everything Trolloc related when some of it was Rand's fault. And then he got kicked off Bael Doman's ship. I remember all that.
Okay. See, I think it's funny that you remember Florin Gelb, but not Igianin.
Oh, I do not remember Igianin. No. I don't like Cianchen, though. So she gets put in the different part of my brain. Whereas Florin Gelb, he was clearly someone you shouldn't have pissed off. Because he's made an appearance here and there where he's ready to, sell anyone's soul to get back at
him. I do remember at the time you said we're probably going to see him again.
Mm. Here he is. He has a bag, and inside the bag is an Adam bracelet. Apparently the third he's found for Igianin. So he's really good at this task, she even thinks to herself, condescendingly, of course. He's also on the lookout for certain women, which, safe to assume, the Elaine Nynaeve Egwene would probably be the women that have been described, because they're the ones who got out of Cianchen clutches.
Okay, so you think that's who Igianin's looking for?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because Cianchen.
So I'm just gonna do a quick disclaimer on the name. I have always referred to her as Igianin. Mm-hmm. I think the popular, prescribed pronunciation in the community is Igianin.
Oh, Igianin.
And then I've also heard some people call her Igianin. I'm not gonna lie. I think what do you say? Igianin?
Igianin.
Igianin's the first time I've ever heard that, but I love it. So, however you want to pronounce
it,
I'm
adding
name, I love
some
it.
Syllables to the I.
Well, that's what you do with Murderall. You say Murderall. I love
that
too.
Well, that one's clear. They're murdering all. I don't like her name. I don't like her, but I'll try just to do the simple Igianin.
However you want to say it.
So, we learn he's been on the lookout for women. But he was incorrect the first time, and she's thinking to herself how he captured a more well-to-do lady, Lilwyn?
Lilwyn was the name.
Whom Igianin didn't want to kill, so pretty much made Lady Lilwyn a sex slave by putting her on a departing ship, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't want to kill her.
Yeah.
Let me just give her to the clutches of people who will do...
She's gonna give him to the blood as a slave.
Who will never see her again. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway,
so basically she just got sold into slavery given to slavery. Yeah.
Florin calls her Mistress Eladar. I don't know if that's really her last name, Eladar. Anyway, and she gives him some silver. He wants more to keep doing his job better. She says no, shoos him off.
Yeah.
And he does that quickly. As soon as she says no, it's like, yeah, I'm not gonna test my boundaries.
She's like, I pay for results. And so far, you have not really given me many results.
Eganin is clearly full of herself, typical of Cianchen. We do eventually, I kind of mixed this in, probably in the wrong spot, but we learn she does give some money towards a soup kitchen, which is out of league for her position in her society because she's not on the blood. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So she does have concern about what she's seeing.
Yeah.
And we'll get, I think we get more to that later. I did highlight why later. So anyway, she's pausing before she leaves because she sees Captain Bail Dolmon. Now I know why she paused. And he doesn't wear a mask. He doesn't have to wear a mask. He's still smuggling. People know who he is. But it's Dolmon.
Yes. Yes. And I'm pretty sure she notes that he's the one that has set up these soup kitchens, right?
That no. Okay. I didn't get it out of this section.
Okay.
But she knows she has a mask on. She's like, I shouldn't have to worry about it. But anyway, so that explains why she was worried about it. Didn't he have to take the oaths by the Cianchen?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
He took the oaths.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's probably... Anyway, I'll let that be.
Well, we knew that from the Great Hunt because he talks to Nynaeve and Elaine and Min. And he tells them, I took the oaths, so now they trust me.
I think I was just confused reading it because I didn't understand why she was so upset. And I was like, well, he took the oaths. You can't be that pissed at him, but...
But he knows who she is.
Got it.
Yeah.
So the proprietor of the Silver Breezes is Salindrin, who takes Aganin's gold. And then she greets the incoming Inquisitor Hykim Carradine. Do we know right away it's Hykim?
I'm pretty sure.
I thought so,
Jacob
too.
Carradine.
So yeah, he's not wearing a mask.
Because Aegina notices
him.
Yeah. Right here.
Yep. And Aegina is just observant. He has a lot of power. Because, like...
Not only is he not wearing a mask.
Salindrin isn't upset about a sword he's wearing in her...
And she doesn't allow weapons in her establishment. But, of course, he is able to walk right in with a sword.
So at that point, Aegina departs, and she has a chair waiting outside with her bodyguards, which is apparently necessary for anyone with money in Tanchico.
Yep.
Here's where she's thinking of the poor in the city, and this is where she is wondering, why doesn't High Lady Sarroth just take over the city and, you know, make the people, like, not destitute, basically?
Yeah.
So, okay. So why hasn't Lady Sarroth? That's what they did in Falm, right? They just took over everything. They just did it. So why is Lady Sarroth holding off on Tanchico? Is she a dark friend?
Or is this
their own agenda with a different issue of the prophecy of the dragon slash whatever, Kalakar, Koromor?
Well, we already know the answer to that last question that you posed.
Okay.
Well, yeah, she's in leagues with Leandrin.
Oh, so she is part of the Dark
Sarroth. Sarroth was one of the women.
This is how much I don't remember.
Yeah, no, Sarroth was the woman that Leandrin took the girls to in Fall at Toman's Head.
So this is all part of the Dark Ones.
Yes. All right, okay.
Yeah, so in sum, I did know all of this, but how much I hate Cianchen, I've forgotten all of this. So, okay. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
That's how much... Okay, back to who I like to call Hykim Carradine. We need some Latino people in here. Now he's in the top floor of the Silver Breezes. There's others seated around a table. He's annoyed they all wear their animal masks. So supposedly they don't know each other, right?
Well, and they're making sure that he doesn't know who they are. So they're obviously all like part of like the upper echelons of the democracy here.
Yes,
of whatever it is, monarchy. And they're talking about...
Well, first, before they start talking, Hykim is still just thinking of all his random family members being killed over the last few months. Because remember, the murder all threatened him. You do this, or one family member a month will die. He thinks of his cousin skinned alive, then his youngest sister, Dielda, carried off from her bridal feast by a murder all, and only wishing, I hope she had a quick death. Like, he's not remorseful. Like, he's not...
He's
like,
an asshole.
At all. Like,
no, he's an asshole. Just,
He's probably ticking off how many more family members can die before they come after me. Like, that's what he's doing. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's being met with the other people, really rich fellas, and this is where you might want to fill in for me, but basically, if I had to summarize it, the Panarch died. I'm not sure we knew that before this chapter.
No, not really.
A queen? Panarch queen?
So, there's the king and then the Panarch. So the Panarch is separate from the king. And I think we already got a little bit of exposition from Elaine a few episodes back about what the Panarch does.
Yes, we did.
So the Panarch is in charge of certain sections. I can't remember it all. I didn't write it down. Okay. And then the king is in charge of his army. Yeah. Okay. Go back a couple episodes. We talked about it all.
So the Panarch is officially dead and they're trying to figure out how. I'm really summarizing a lot because I don't think I took good details. We do realize the king, who is King Andric, is present and Hakim knows it. But I guess the other people probably don't know it.
Yeah, there's a younger leopard, there's an older leopard with gray, and then there's a lion.
And a dude with a big mustache sticking out under the mask.
Yeah. Right? And he knows that the lion is Andric because the lion hasn't been talking, and then he says at some point, I don't know if I'm skipping ahead from where you are, but I agree we can. Oh, these pages are so stuck together.
I just have a King Andric wants the White Cloaks to restore order to the city. Right?
Yes.
And this is where there's some suspicion. Oh, yeah. I don't know if this was really that important, but Carradine is just saying, I don't know what Lord Captain Commander will say, but he's thinking to himself, Pedronel would be very forceful.
He would, yeah.
And there isn't a clear assassin to who killed the Panarch, but Carradine suspects King Andric had it done.
Yeah. Yep.
Great.
And they want, there's already another lady that they want to move into.
And that's
it.
Where it got weird. I was like, who's this lady Almathera chick? But that must be the lady.
Almathera.
She's already sleeping with the king. So.
Yep.
So anywho.
It's just all sorts of just shady businesses going on in Tanchico.
Yes. And there's even some, I think this is, it's stupid details, but I think it's important details. Someone claims, well, no Terra Boner would do this and murder the Panarch. It had to have been a dragon sworn. So they're upset with all the people following the dragon, which I think is important to note. So more plotting, and the masked man claims the king will surely assist in, you know, getting the note ready for the White Cloaks to take over the Panarch's palace, not saying how he'll do it. And this is where it's interesting. It's one of these complex, it has a Game of Thrones feel of the Terra Boners are believing White Cloaks will be blamed for any killing done. And actually, Carradine could not give two shits. He has his own agenda.
Yep.
He could care less. He just takes leave, doesn't care who he offends by not sipping wine with them.
Yep.
So I probably missed a few important details, but it was really, to me, a boring scene.
And it's basically just talking about politics that are going on in Tanchico right now. We really covered it. I don't think that we need to go into great detail with this. I want to talk a little bit more about what happens next.
Okay.
This is the less interesting part.
And this is another part that I'm going to tell you. I'm like, I had to have read this.
But
I swear I don't remember the details. And I'll tell you what detail I vaguely remember, but it's going to be an LOL, guys. Okay. Hakim heads back to his palace on the Varana, commandeered for the children's headquarters. There's an interesting quote. I don't know why I got stuck on this paragraph, but, well, there were no disagreements from the owner, whose head is now adorned on a spike above the traitor's steps at Masita. I had to reread that a few times, but I'm like, oh, okay.
Yep.
They're doing their thing.
Yeah.
Don't disagree with us or pretend you can claim whatever.
I'm sure with White Cloaks, they just claimed that he was a dark friend.
Yeah.
And it didn't take much to convince the people, and they were able to behead him, and
And
now they have his palace.
So, Hakim loves the luxury, but right now he's too distracted to notice it as he wanders about the whereabouts of Ram, thinking about the amount of followers of the so-called Dragon Reborn. It's enough to build two armies.
So do you remember what his orders were from the Murdral?
No, kill Rand.
Kill Rand. So for every month that he doesn't kill Rand,
A family member
gets killed.
Ugh. Yeah, and isn't this where he's thinking to himself, I have another sister they can kill, or something like that? It's
well, so anyways, let's get into it a little
bit
more.
Okay, so Hakim is too distracted to even notice the lovely blonde woman in red with honey-colored braids and a pouty mouth. Fucking Leandrin is in his rooms. And then, this is the best, do you know how she greets him?
Tell me.
With the name Bors. So this is my big LOL moment. I did not connect Bors to being a past character, from this book. So this is where I'm like, I think I did read this chapter because I was pretty sure we did eventually meet Bors somewhere in this book.
Yeah.
Never, when I read it the first read through, I guarantee I didn't remember who Hakeem Carradine was. Guarantee.
Yeah.
If I really read this chapter. So, anyway, I just thought he was a random guy they brought in, and it was just random. Who knows who Bors is? He's just this random guy now. Anyway, he wasn't random. He was Hakeem Carradine.
We kind of got hints that he might have been Bors.
From the murder all?
Yeah, earlier on in this book when he's talking, I think in the prologue when he's talking, when the murder all comes and he's talking to him and how he already has, but this is where we get confirmation. He is the man who calls himself Bors from the Dark Friend Social, from the Great Hunt.
And Leandra knows who he is.
Yes, so Leandra was also there.
So now Leandrin reminds him of the Dark Friend Social, and do you remember the faces of Matrim and Perrin and Rand? And basically assuring him, I know who the fuck you are. So he freaks out, begs not to be killed. Is this where he throws out, I have sisters.
This is where he's, I've tried, but I cannot find him. I cannot. I was told my family would be killed if I failed, one by one. I was promised I would be last. I have cousins yet, nephews, nieces. I have another sister. He must give me more time. Okay, so can we just agree that Jacob Carradine is, yes, he's a dark friend, but he's also just a horrible, ooh, gross, what a horrible fucking piece of shit he is.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I agree.
Love it.
So Leandrin puts him in a power air gel hold, you know, the one where you can't move. Rand's been in one before.
Yeah.
Rand's been in one, I think, twice before. Condescendingly, she says, well, if you're a good dog, you can watch Rand's death. And then Hakeem realizes, okay, so she's not on an errand to just kill me. And he finally realizes she's Black Aja. And this is where I'm like, who did you think the Aes Sedai were at the Dark Friend Social, buddy?
Yeah.
Just random Aes Sedai that go back to their Blue Aja, whatever.
Well, I have to imagine that even among Dark Friends, the tales of, Black Aja, Aes Sedai shut that shit down real fast, you know. Whenever they hear that, they're like, no, there's no such thing as a Black Aja. So I have to imagine that even the Dark Friends who know that they're a Dark Friend Aes Sedai still have a hard time wrapping their head around the vernacular of Black Aja, right? Anyways.
So Leandrin insists Hakeem and the White Cloaks must take over the Plan Archer's palace and will not take no for an answer. Basically, she takes her leave after giving her name, but warns it had better not touch the dog's lips. So she's just treating him like a straight-up dog.
Oh, yeah.
Few scattered anxieties by Hakeem, worried his life could be on the line with Niall, but also realizing she's saying she'd protect him from the murderall that will kill him if Rand doesn't die. So it's kind of like he's doing this, okay, I'm in hot water, but this is maybe going to lead to somewhere better. So Leandrin leaves through the back entrance. The guard smiles, leans in for a kiss, and she just stabs him in the eye.
Stabs him in the eye.
Doesn't want loose lips to sink her ship, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's also some thoughts she has about wishing she had enough power to kill, such as making the blood boil and doing what Chesmal and Rihanna do. And we learn it's closely connected to the power of healing.
And she can't heal more than bumps and bruises, so.
And neither can Shiriam, we learned. And now I'm trying to go through my mind, who else is Yellow Aja that might be able to kill? Oh, I've said Nynaeve has healing power, but...
Oh, do you think Nynaeve's going to become a Black Aja, Yellow Sister, murderer?
She'd probably just use a good old-fashioned sword. So this is where Leandrin returns to the Black Aja hideout, thinking Tarvalon would have no idea where they're at. Apparently she didn't hear about Joya spilling the beans. Then who killed Joya? Tongue on the cellar door.
Yeah.
Apparently the dark one. I don't know. Anyway, but she's also aware Tarvalon will look eventually. So they are hiding out in a smaller house that was merely owned by a merchant dark friend. And Leandrin's a total dick toward the servant Gildan.
Yeah.
Getting so angry, Leandrin speaks like the commoner fruit seller her dad was. So we learn a little about her history.
Yes.
Moving forward, she just goes into the room where they're all meeting, and there's only 9 of the 11 Black Aja in this particular space, and so now she's irked some aren't there. It's just, Leandrin's just mad.
Well, and it's interesting, we get a little bit of insight on where she came from. So she acts like this classist bitch who she doesn't like Wilder, she doesn't like, poor people, but she her origin story is she was a poor Wilder. Because she was a Wilder because she started channeling. We already got that when she was in Faldara.
Mudbloods from Harry Potter almost, right?
Yeah.
Like Snape? No. Anyway, we won't go into Harry Potter today. We get some fun descriptions of who is in this Black Aja coven, as I found this to be kind of like a witch's coven.
Yeah.
Roundface Eldrith Jondar of the Brown. We also have our cat lady friend Marilyn Gemelfin.
Yeah.
Also of the Brown with her cat. Not knowing Eldrith uses her stray cats for experiments. It's hilarious. Okay, of the Greens, there's Jean Cade. I want to say Jean Cade because it's like John Clark. Anyway.
Jean Cade, okay.
Who wears low-cut dresses to catch the eyes of men. But she's from Era Domon.
And that's what the Domani do?
Yeah. There's also Asna Zeramin, described with dark, tilted eyes and a bold nose, just like Fael and Kadir. What's this dark, tilted eyes and bold nose?
Yeah, I don't know. Does she say? Go
for right now.
Okay.
I don't know if she did say where she's from, but I should know where
Fael's. We know where Fael's from. We don't necessarily know where Kadir's from, but we know where Fael's from.
She's from the west.
Do you want to look at the map?
We can. If you say the name, I'd remember the name.
I don't know if I want to give you the name.
Why not?
But here.
Why not? Saladar?
We know.
Saldia.
Yes.
I knew I'd see it.
Yes.
So she's from the north.
I was going to say, we know that she's a borderlander. Because she talks about how they have to deal with the Trolloc raids often. That's true. Yeah. So we know that she's a borderlander.
Okay. So anyway, I just wanted to describe them because I don't think we've had too much ourselves.
We haven't. I love it. I love it. So we got anybody other than Asna Zeramin?
I didn't write any others down. There have to be, because there's supposed to be nine of them. I only got four of them.
There's Rihanna.
Oh, Rihanna.
And Dameron. She's a dick. Black hair with a stark white streak.
And she's the one.
With
that, Julian Sanders' mishap.
Yep. She's the one that was like, why don't we just kill him?
Oh, because she can. I get it. Okay. So she's yellow.
So we know.
Was yellow.
That Rihanna and Chesmo are the two yellow sisters who like to kill with the power.
Must be tempting.
So we've got six of them, right? We've got six of them plus her, so there's seven. So we're missing two plus the two that aren't there. So anyways.
So they're just doing some basic plotting, as one would expect from a Black Witch's Coven. But it shows us the perspective of the Black Aja. So this is where Leandrin announces Carradine are moving White Cloaks to the Panarch's Palace as planned. She gets a good laugh. She thought he thought I was going to kill him for not murdering Randall Thor. And Asne says, well, that makes no sense. Where to bind and control him, not kill him. Here is a distinct difference that their instructions are not the same as his, or Leandrin is on a power trip and making her own plot separate from the Dark Social Orders. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I wouldn't put that past her, but this is very different because Carradine's to kill and they're to, well, I'm assuming they're getting their own, he only saw two Aes Sedai at the Darkman Social. Doesn't mean there weren't more.
That's true.
But
that's true.
Of the two, we know Leandrin was one.
Yes.
And so we have to assume these came from her. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's why I said it could be separate, too.
Yep. She needs to bind and control him. Those were her orders. His order was to kill.
So, Jean...
Why do you think they all got contradicting orders?
Do you think it's one of those, I can't trust any of you shits? So, you're all going to do different things?
I always kind of thought of it as, like, sowing the seeds of chaos.
Oh, that works, too. That works, too. And getting a good laugh out of it.
Exactly. Like, I mean, the Dark One's kind of a dick. He just...
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
So Jean frets about the Forsaken, and this is another important detail about the Black Aja. They believe they will rule the world when the Great Lord returns, but Jean is worried they'll be crushed by warring Forsaken. So Asna insists, we'll use Balefire against the Forsaken, and thinking of the Tarangro they are ordered to take, and this was the fluted black rod that was a pace long.
Yeah.
However, it's also pretty hard to control, as Jean found out the hard way. So Leandrin interrupts just to say they need to control the Dragon Reborn and they'll have enough power. So that's interesting. We got to know the specific use of one of the Tirangrial. We've seen Balefire now from, well, Egwene's testing.
Yes.
Moraine? Did she use it once? Moraine
used it.
Has Nynaeve gotten, or was that a dream, Nynaeve?
I'm drawing a blank. I think that was a dream.
Or I'm just confusing Egwene.
Yeah, I don't think Nynaeve's used it.
So anyway, interesting. And Nynaeve does have an affiliation with fire, didn't she find that out, or no?
Egwene does, yes.
Yeah, which is more male. But
she's stronger in earth and fire than most women. Yeah. Because that's usually earth and fire are usually the elements that the men are strongest in.
Got it.
And air and water are the ones that women are more strong in usually.
Okay.
And then spirit is kind of like a wash.
Okay, here Leandrin notices Gildan is now cleaning inside their room, which, by the way, that's what Leandrin ordered Gildan to do earlier. And so Leandrin's a worse dick than ever to poor Gildan, again dropping into commoner talk and then mad at herself for that. So things are not going Leandrin's way.
No.
Leandrin's angry. Eldrith hasn't learned anything new or helpful from her studies. But I wanted to note she actually interrupts poor Eldrith when she's trying to share something about a treatise. We get nothing more of that detail, and I wonder if that treatise will come back and bite Leandrin in her ass.
No, it is difficult enough getting into the king's library. If I extracted so much as a page, the librarians would know it immediately. But if I disposed of them, I would never find anything. That place is a maze. No, I found this in a bookseller's near the king's palace. It is an interesting treatise on...
interruption.
Embracing Sidar, Leandrin sent the pages showering across the floor. Unless they are treaties on the controlling of Randall Thor, let them be burned. What have you learned about what we seek?
I don't know.
It's in the Panarch's palace. Yes. She knows this in the Panarch's palace.
And it's Marilyn who comes save the day. I was just saying, I'm curious about that treatise, but maybe I'm over-concerned. Cat Lady Marilyn saves the day, and she's really encouraging, like, it's in the palace, we can begin looking for it as soon as the White Cloaks have control. Like, so that's, and that is kind of what brings Leandrin back to Earth, like, yep. Okay. But end scene, Leandrin's having these thoughts, and you can read it if you want on the bottom, but of the people bowing down to her. And I'm really foreseeing her having a huge attack of karma eventually.
She was tired of waiting, tired of hiding. Let the world know her. Let people bend knee as had been promised when she first forswore old oaths for new. So that basically like confirms that when you become Black Aja, you're able to shed your former oaths, right?
Oh, yeah, because that's been a holdup for these poor Aes Sedai. Just interesting, because I feel like Black Aja have been getting away with a lot. So, that's the end of that scene, but we're not done with this chapter, because we have to go back to Igenin. I struggle with her name.
It's fine. I did too for a really long time.
We had a sixth grade teacher named Mrs. Eggy. I mean, I could call her Eggy, but anyway.
The only problem with that is a lot of the fandom calls Egwene Egg.
Oh.
Or Eggy. But you can call it Egwene.
Egwene Gwen if I had a nickname. Okay. But I don't. So back to Egwene's perspective. She's returning home, putting her bag on the table, the whole time realizing someone is present, and she discreetly grabs a small crossbow. Here she looks across the room, and a really nonchalant, pale-haired, blue-eyed man is calmly waiting, reveals a plaque of a raven and a tower. And then... we pretty much, as readers learn, the raven is the symbol of the imperial family, and the Tower of Ravens is a symbol of imperial justice. He is what's called a seeker of the truth.
Now, he is property, but he is property of the highest blood. So even though he's property, he outranks her.
Yeah, and she's pissed about that.
And she's not property. She's, you know. But she's not of the blood.
She must do what the seeker asks.
Yes.
Must.
Yes.
So. He says he serves High Lady Seroth and the Corinne, And more or less, Aegon must do what he asks. He mentions the embarrassment of Suldam deserters in Falm, and that the desertation, I really can't read that word, and that they deserted must not become common knowledge. It's an important detail, and I'll tell you why soon. So she makes him tea as requested, answers more questions. We learn he came by passage of frickin' Bael Doma, and here it is again. Do you think that he knew anything about her and Bael? It's kind of funny.
No, I think Bael Doma just has his sticky little fingers everywhere.
I guess. I love Bael. So she must sketch maps of Tanchico for him, and sketch any defenses, and draw every other city and town she knows anything about, including strengths and loyalties. So he just forces her to work. And do you think this took, like, hours? Like, that would take me forever. Yeah,
possibly.
And she's pissed the whole time. But then at that point, he basically is like, okay, I'll check in on you in a few weeks. But he is kind of flaunting, like, I do hold rank over you.
Yes.
You pissed me off by demanding proof.
Yeah, because you skipped over that. She demanded, she was like, normally the plaque would be enough, but I don't trust you, so you need to give me more. So he took off his shirt and showed the tattoos on his back.
You know what? I don't remember, but he had to take off his shirt, you're right. And that's what probably got him irked. Ravens, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Which is now interesting, too, because doesn't Matt's shaft sword...
On either shoulder was the tattoo of a raven and a tower.
And Matt's shaft sword has two ravens on it.
It does.
We'll have to find out if that is any connection whatsoever. Freaking birds. I don't really love birds.
Matt's shaft has connections of all over the place.
That was a good one. Okay. So he leaves scene. She sits for a bit, kind of, I think, kind of sort of in shock of what just happened.
Yeah.
And then she starts to fret. Did he go to my basement? Realizing she's looking at the lock and knows he could have picked it and she would never know.
Yeah.
That's how good they are.
Yes.
So at last she gets up, opens the lock, goes to basement, and we find a woman, Bethamine, sitting in a dirty dress. And she is a Suldam Aegon has found. And this is where Aegon gets really confused because she's like, why does the Autumn work on the Suldam?
Yeah.
We're all tested for being Domain or Suldam talents.
Yeah. I mean, she had these extra Adams, right?
Yeah.
And she found the Suldam and she just put it on her as a way to like leash her, basically, without expecting it to actually work.
But it worked.
But it worked, which means...
And it still works.
Which means...
She can channel.
Yeah. Bethamine's like, please, Aegon, we've known each other for over 10 years. Please take this off. Buddies. And Aegon is like, if you can bring it over to me, then I'll take it off. Yeah. And she can't. She can't do it. And that's just proof that Suldam can become Domane.
Yeah, which we were pretty sure of in the Great Hunt.
Yeah.
But, okay, Bethamine denies anyone came to the basement, which I believe her. I think there would have been a lot of trouble right away. This is what I wanted to connect. He made a comment about finding Suldam, and here one is underneath your feet, buddy.
Yep.
Okay, so Aegon goes back to her thoughts. She returns upstairs just wondering, okay, there must be other Suldam besides Bethamine who can channel. Is that why High Lady Sirroth wanted those left behind at Falm killed? Then she wonders why High Lady Sirroth would keep this from the Empress. And readers learn more of Aegon's plot to continue working with the likes of Gilb and finding more Adam and Suldam and figuring out if others have the same power. And something about not wanting to die a death of 1,000 tears, but also feeling a bit rebellious because she's critically thinking and not just doing as ordered.
Yes.
Which for the Siyanshin is clearly a red flag in terms of following orders. You do it or you're whatever, toast. So I said a lot of those details because I think we just learned a lot more about Siyanshin.
Yes.
Than we realized. Woofta.
There's a lot of baggage that the Siyanshin carry.
Yeah, this is nuts. And
if you have to assume that if it got out to the Siyanshin, that the leash holders, which are the Suldam, should actually be the leashed ones.
Oh, boy.
That there's a possibility that that could
happen.
Well, that could like destroy their governmental structure, right?
Right, because then they're learning any of these women who are tested to be demane, they're going to put two and two together and realize they can channel is yes. why they're demane, and they're learning how to do it better and better with the more practice with their, or wait, opposite. Demane are the slaves, Suldam are yes. the holders. So the more that they realize Suldam are the ones who can learn how to channel.
Yes.
And they're learning by using the Adam on
yes. the okay, so, okay. So the Suldam, or excuse me, the Demane or Demane are the ones who
born with the
are
talent.
Born with the talent, like Elaine, Avianda, Egwene, Nynaeve, you know, all of our favorite channelers. And the Suldam are the ones that have the ability to learn, but it's not inborn.
Haha. You know, and I gotta say, even this part, I'm like, I'm not sure I remember reading this the first read through. I might have skipped this chapter. That's terrible. So that all feels very new to me.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's okay. great.
But that is the end of the chapter at last. We had like, was it three or four different, three different perspectives, went back to one of them.
Yes, yes. We started with Aegean, went to Caridon, went to Leandrin, and then went back to Aegean.
Yeah.
Aegean.
Okay.
Aegean. All right.
Shall we wrap it up with chapter 39, A Cup of Wine?
Yes, let's do it.
Let's do it. So finally, we're at an update of Elaine and Egwene. Tom and Julin have found out the real purpose of their journey and are not pleased about this whole Black Aja business in Tanchico. The folks get off the ship in Tanchico. Coin kind of says farewell, saying her husband will be trading. And she'll continue on her way to share the news of the Comodore to Dantora.
Coramor.
And the Isle Jaffra and Cantoran. And Isle Somera. So I assume these Isles are like islands.
Yes.
Okay. Joran says farewell, a little more formal, a little like...
It's really confusing that they're spelled the exact same way as the Aiel, though, huh?
It's not. A-I-L-E versus A-I-E-L. I say it the same way.
Oh, that's right. Okay,
unless
okay.
I misspelled okay. it, which is also possible.
No, you're right.
Oh, hilarious. When Joran says farewell, isn't it like a kiss on the fingers and then her mm-hmm. fingers to their lips?
Yes, yes, and which is a very...
Intimate. And I think both Elaine and Nynaeve do it, and we learn Elaine has a strong bond with her. They've both taught each other about channeling, which is pretty cool.
Yep, she taught her a shit ton about air, and weaving wind, and Elaine taught her about fire.
Which is probably going to be handy if them damn Sianchin come back. Okay. So again, don't be deceived by Tanchico's infamous tanning opportunities. It really is as dangerous as has been hinted. So Tom and Julin set off and act gruff to scare away any trouble. Nynaeve's not disagreeing with this tactic. When she looks around, kind of sees the sketchy-ish people around. But lo and behold, they run into the infamous, mustacheless, and beardful Bael Domen. Cue scene. He recognizes Nynaeve and just apologizes. I waited in Fallen as long as possible. Are you guys doing the same thing here?
He jumps right to it. Is this going to be Fallen again? You guys being here, is the same thing going to happen? And Nynaeve's like, no, this time we're only hunting the Black Aja. And he's like, Jesus Christ. Fallen all over again.
So he offers to take them to an inn he knows, saying, no, really, there's no vacancy these days.
But I've got some sway at this certain inn. I can probably get you a room.
And I think it's kind of clear to them right away that he must have sway already. And you know, Julin's not happy this is a smuggler, but it's also like, deal with it, brother.
Yeah.
Okay, so they arrive to the inn, the Three Plum Court, and have a small shot because innkeeper Rendra looks very similar to Leandrin.
Honey-colored blades, rosebud mouth.
Brown eyes.
Yep.
But she's super friendly, and when Nynaeve asks about tending to the poor, because Nynaeve is also concerned with everything she's seen in the streets, Rendra suggests we'll donate to Bael's soup kitchen. That's where he does his own self-taxes and gives twice as much to the kitchen as he does to those he bribes. And Bael's super humble about it, you know, saying, I do make quite a profit, and it's quite less than actual taxes. So this is where we realize Bael has opened soup kitchens.
Yes.
And then I think it's ironic because I'm like, oh, does Aegean know she's donating towards Bael's soup kitchen?
I don't know.
She might. I don't know.
She might. She might not. But yeah, apparently he's become super wealthy, and he's found a really nice niche here in Tanshiko for himself.
Yeah.
And he's doing good. He's doing good work.
And this is where Nynaeve then says, hey, Bale, we probably will need your help again because, you know, we need more eyes and ears. We are going against Black Aja and Tanshiko. Black Aja and Tanshiko. And Bale determines, great, this is Falm all over again. But Nynaeve just pops his bubble of escape, just being like, you go to Ilion, guess who's there? Samael. Yep. There's no safe place to hide anymore. And she's not wrong.
Yeah, no, there she's not.
It's over.
Yeah, the last battle's coming, bro.
Yeah, and Elaine, of course, is sweet as a tactic, and Bale just calls out their good cop, bad cop tactic of she's mean, she's nice.
Yeah.
But he's not disagreeing. So Julin starts to talk about his plan that he'll go to the streets because cut purses and burglars are out about at night and generally have a good idea of what's really going on in the city. Tom takes the opportunity to ask specific questions of Bale about nobles and factions and allies. You know, so it's a little hint for the girls, like, he's not just Glee Man.
Nope, he knows some stuff.
So when Doman leaves, Julin goes off to the streets because it's nighttime. Nynaeve's still getting over seasickness, so she goes up to the room she'll end up sharing with Elaine. And side note, poor Tom and Julin have to share a bed in the other vacant room, so it's funny. Tom goes to perform in the common room, as promised to innkeeper Rendra, and Elaine decides to grab a table for herself and enjoy the commoner life.
Yep.
And she loves it.
She orders one cup of wine.
Yep, Rendra gives her one cup of wine, and she gets to listen to all Tom's stories. There's a handsome, smiling servant who keeps her wine full. Sounds suspicious, but Elaine's way too into Tom's show to notice. But she's totally wasted by the end of the night.
Yeah.
But she even blames to herself, must be the jelly I ate earlier, because no princess gets wasted.
Exactly.
The handsome servant offers to help her to her room. Thankfully, she refuses. She manages to walk up to Tom's room without encountering rape or assault or burglary. Because I was worried, for the record. It was like, yeah, he kept you drunk.
He kept you drunk because he wanted to escort you to your room and
do something.
Bada boom, bada bing, bada bang. Yeah, not cool.
No.
Not cool.
But she passes Nynaeve's room and goes on up to Tom's room and announces, I do remember you. Tugs his mustache and she's like, I sat on your knee. And my mom sat on your knee.
Why was my mom sitting on your knee?
Oh, gosh. So it's this, like, drunken discovery. It's just putting two and two together. Not that she hasn't before. But she's just like, so I knew about Gareth Bryn. I didn't know about you. So her mom has lovers. Okay.
Yeah.
And Tom just confirms, yes, I was a court bard once upon a time. You know, why I stopped is a story for another day. And then he defends her mother's honor when she kind of makes a derogative remark about why would my mom be a hussy. And he just says it's lonely to be queen. And even slaps inebriated Elaine when she's getting a little mouthy. Yep. So he encourages her to bed, hoping she'll forget this talk in the morning. Now Elaine successfully goes downstairs to her shared room with Nynaeve, managing not to trip down the stairs or break anything. And here again, I'm like, Tom, you should have escorted her.
Yeah, right. Home. Exactly.
I know it was an awful conversation, but this woman sloshed.
Yep.
She could have broken a neck. Okay.
So anyway, she gets to the room with Nynaeve.
Yeah, this is great. Nynaeve catches on very quickly that Elaine over-imbibed and just is like, hey, look at something in the water bucket. And just shoves Elaine's head under the water repeatedly until Elaine sobers up. So it works. Kind of. And this is where we kind of learn they're still trying to find Egwene and Teleron Riad. So it's Nynaeve's turn to take the ring because clearly Elaine isn't in the right mode. And they haven't seen her. And it's been almost 10 nights since Egwene was snatched away mid-dream. So Elaine promises she'll stay awake because Nynaeve can't get out without being woken up.
Yeah.
And boom. Nynaeve is in Teleron Riad, right in the heart of the stone. It's super empty, yet she feels like she's being watched. We get the inner dialogue again of Nynaeve acknowledging she doesn't have the same power down here as they do. She struggles to control her outfit, of course, thinking of Lan, and suddenly in a sheer gown that would make Verlaine blush.
Yeah.
But Nynaeve feels like she's really being watched and just kind of gets into this panic mode, and she's like, I gotta go. So she feels impending doom, begins to run, thinks of Egwene being in the waste, and boom, she's in the hot desert of the waste.
Yep.
and she sees a very foggy area in the distance and a man in blue walking around it. She's at Viridian.
Yeah.
Wasn't that great? Not that she knows it. We don't know who that man in blue is either. He who seems to be poking. We'll get to that. I don't know right now who it is. Man, it better not be that freaking peddler. Not Kadir, the other one. Padam Fane always puts his nose in everyone's business.
Oh.
But he's supposed to be in the Two Rivers.
He's in the Two Rivers right
so
now.
So unless he's really
and
magical.
As far as we know, he can't get into the dream world.
No. Okay, so a woman appears next to her, blonde with fancy braids and something silver at her side. It's Birgit. Back again. And then she just immediately is like, you must get out of here now. If that one sees you, you are dead. Or worse. So maybe it's just Slayer from...
Maybe Slayer?
From the Two Rivers. But he's in the Two Rivers, you know what I mean?
But he's also in the dream world. It seems like you can kind of bounce around in the dream world pretty much wherever you want to go.
I also kind of think of Birgit as She-Ra from He-Man.
Okay.
Just so everyone knows.
No, She-Ra's cool.
Okay. Nynaeve then finds herself in the Two Rivers because she had to get away. And again, she thinks she sees Birgit running down the road. So now Nynaeve is doing typical Nynaeve. Hey, I want more information. Runs after her, only to turn a corner and run into a tall man in a dark coat who has the same face as Lan and then shoots an arrow at her. Whoa.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a moment. So Nynaeve screams and jumps to the side, clawing herself awake, which she is successfully awoken. She has a scratch on her arm. Now, let's discuss a guy who looks like Lan. So again, in Two Rivers, I'd really be like, well, it must be Slayer. But Lan's cousin, Isim, are we back to him?
Possibly.
Because that's the only guy I know who may or may not look like Lan.
Possibly. Maybe he's a Melchiari.
Maybe. And Nynaeve was super upset it was Lan. And Elaine's like, it was not
it
Lan.
It wasn't Lan.
Like,
Lan
really helps her just
you. Yeah.
Clarify, like, nope, that's not how Teleronriad works. Like, you don't get... nightmares per se, you get like other bad people, which is worse than a nightmare. And really, that's almost, I mean, then Nynaeve just shares, okay, well, I saw Birgit but no Egwene, and they go to bed.
Pretty much.
And this chapter's almost over. So in the morning they wake up, Elaine has her first ever hangover. Tom checks in on her. She pretends to not remember the late night conversation. He may or may not believe her. Julian comes in from outside. He has a black eye, but super excited because he got a wealth of information from all the thieves he talked to. And he does believe one account about an ageless woman with dark hair and a white streak.
Yes. And so. And Nynaeve was like, there's plenty of women with dark hair and white streaks.
Hey, me
and
too.
And he's like, yeah, but he couldn't put an age to her.
Yeah.
As far as he was concerned, she had no age.
Yeah.
Which, that's Aes Sedai.
Then, Elaine takes whatever potion Nynaeve made for her to get rid of the hangover, and Nynaeve is just like, yep, we're going to go about the city because we need more eyes if we're going to find these Black Aja. And the men are just like, yeah, well, they got the same description of you guys going around the city. And in comes Rendra to talk about clothing options and offering to braid their hair. So they're going to blend in.
Nynaeve's
like
already taking care of it.
Yeah.
Nynaeve's so, ahead of the game.
It finishes, though, that there is one final problem Tom and Julian aren't aware of. And there's something in Tanchico that will bind Rand with the power and must also be found along with Leandrin and not the others. So again, we're back to whatever is in the Pan Arches Palace.
Yep.
So, whoa, that was a lot. That was
a
lot of information.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, I'm just like, how did I forget half of this stuff? But I'm like,
There's a lot of information, and it's really easy. I've read this series so many times, and there's still chapters I come to, and I was like, I don't remember this at all.
Yeah. So, but that's it. I don't know. Did you want to go into detail?
Like I said, I think these chapters are skimmable. There's so much information, but a lot of it is just kind of set up, right? Like it's so. I say we just go ahead and move right into our Fuck, Marry, Kills.
I didn't write any down. Do you have any off the top of your head?
I think I can pull them out real fast.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, I'm going to fuck Baal Domin.
Of course.
He's awesome. He's he waited for them as long as he could, and now that he's here, he's like, I will make it up to you that I wasn't able to stay, even though the fucking city was burning all around me. There was weird mist, there was the Cianchen, there was the White Cloaks, it was like, I stayed as long as I could. So definitely fucking Bale Domin.
Yeah.
The Merry... Merry's a little bit tougher for me.
I would agree. Like, off the top of my head, I'm like, there are a lot of great people, but you didn't necessarily get to the in-depth.
I'm going to marry Matt.
Okay.
He needs a friend right now. He's kind of lost in the dark, and he needs somebody he can trust, and I could be a good husband to him.
You could. You can do this.
And I'm not gonna lie, the kill is the hardest because there are so many.
Yeah.
There are so many assholes in this. So I will go ahead and I'm gonna kill Eldrith.
Okay. Tell me why.
Because she's the one that keeps killing all of Marilyn Gamalfin's cats.
Such and a good choice.
I don't like people who kill cats because they just don't give a shit about animals. So I'm going to kill Eldrith, the Black Aja cat killer.
Okay. I like it. Then there are a few fuckables, but I'll say Birgit.
Okay.
Just because she's doing her thing again where she's interrupting the Lace of Time. You know, she did it once before with Perrin.
Yeah.
Perdog.
Yeah.
And probably done it before then, too. Mary, you know, this one is easy, yet I just want to honor Ruark putting Avienda in her place was nice. Yeah. And what I like about him is that easy guidance for Rand, like, time to do spears.
Yeah.
Like, you just made a fool of yourself with the swords. Like, and he didn't say any of that. He just said, time for spears.
Yeah.
I like it.
Time for you to, like, to move a peg up on the Isle's eyes, you know?
Yeah. Plenty of kills, but I'll just say the dude who kept filling Elaine's cup because not cool.
Okay.
And it also was suspicious. Like, at first I thought, total dark friend. He's going to, like, kidnap you.
Most likely just some gross, horny...
It might... Because he didn't accost her when he had the opportunity, it's probably more just a horny kid.
Yeah. Okay, just in case we got interrupted there, go ahead and say your kill again.
I will kill the man who kept filling Elaine's cup with wine. Just... First off, it seemed suspicious.
Yes.
Like, he seemed dark friend worthy. But then when he didn't actually accost her, it was like, okay, so he's just like a random horny guy who thought he could get a girl drunk and then she'd follow him. Not cool.
Yeah.
Not a cool tactic.
Not a cool tactic.
So, that's what I got.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the next week, we will be doing 3 chapters again.
All right.
Right? It's the chapter title, and this is one of my favorite chapter titles of the entire series, Hunter of Trollocs.
All right.
So.
That's exciting.
Right?
There's a Hunter of Trollocs where, like, the Trolloc, you know, the Trollocs have those, like, horns. Do they have that skull on top of their head?
So you think a Hunter of Trollocs would, like, adorn themselves with Trolloc jewelry, like maybe, like, Trolloc hands. And
oh, yeah. You'd have, like, a necklace of, you know, hands or skulls or something. Yeah, this is great. Okay. I'm looking forward to it. And until then, everyone be excellent to each other.
And party on, dudes. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Gleeman's Apprentice.
The Gleeman's Apprentice is available on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Breaker, and Radio Public.
Our theme song is written by Twitch Avery and performed by Andrel, Bard of Time.